You are listening to Dateline Washington on the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Carambas. Thanks for being with us. It appears that at least at the moment, the White House and congressional Democrats have struck a deal on at least a stopgap measure for the ailing U.S. auto industry. The price tag right now looks at about $14 billion, which is about the emergency money being asked for by General Motors and Chrysler. With me now to offer his thoughts on where the negotiations are going and whether this is the right move by Congress at this time is Joe Hinrichs, Group Vice President of Global Manufacturing and Labor Affairs at the Ford Motor Company. And Joe, it's a great pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Greg.
Obviously, it's the other two automakers that needed the emergency funding. You were basically asking for $9 billion in a line of credit. What do you make of this proposal that congressional leaders and apparently the White House have come to an agreement on?
Well, I've been taking a look at the drafts of both the House and Senate proposals this afternoon, and I think clearly this will be an opportunity for GM and Chrysler to get the access to liquidity they say they desperately so need in the near future.
And about, do you wish that they had gone for the whole $34 billion in bridge loans and lines of credit and that sort of thing, or do you believe it's right to do the stopgap measure now and you're okay with them dealing with some other issues down the road?
Well, I think it's very consistent with what we heard from the feedback from Congress, and that is, very cautiously want to step forward here with the taxpayer money, want to make sure that the taxpayer money will be returned. And so I think it makes sense, given everything that's happened in the financial sector and otherwise, to take steps here and make sure that we have a viability plan that leads to profitability so the taxpayer gets paid back.
Of course, last month, your boss, Alan Mulally, as well as the heads of GM and Chrysler were in town, and they were told to come back this month, which they did with a more detailed restructuring plan. What's your sense of how those hearings went and how confident you are that your company, as well as the others, are moving forward in a sound and responsible way?
Well, I was there both times. I was in Washington, D.C. for both testimonies and for both the day's events. Clearly, the second time we came back, we submitted our plans, as you know. And I'll speak to Ford. I mean, basically, our plan was an extension of what we've been working on for the last several months, if not the last couple of years. So it was easy for us to put together and easy to talk about. We feel confident that we'll be able to deliver on the plan that we put forth. We've been delivering on it now for a couple of years. Clearly, there's more work to be done by the whole industry to make sure we have a competitive cost structure and a competitive base from a manufacturing standpoint to move forward. But at least at Ford, we're optimistic about the future, and we're looking forward to being engaged in any restructuring discussions that take place.
Well, what's the basis for your optimism? Why do you believe you'll be able to increase market share, return to profitability, and not have to come back to the government for more assistance?
Well, in our plan, we assuming that we basically hold on to our market share and we're going to ride out this recession that we're in. I guess what helps us feel confident, number one, we made a profit in the first quarter of this year as a company. And so the restructuring we've been through over the last couple of years was showing that it was working before the credit market crunch and before the gas prices went up and other things happened. We've sold off Jaguar, Land Rover, Aston Martin. We sold 20% of Mazda. We're exploring our strategic options with Volvo. So we've shed ourselves of many of the excess brands that we have so we can focus on Ford and Lincoln Mercury here in the U.S. And, we have profitable operations in Europe and South America that are models for us moving forward, and those are where some of those vehicles are going to come from, where we balance our portfolio going forward. So that's what brings the optimism.
How about price competitiveness? There's been a lot of talk about the legacy costs, pensions, and benefits for retirees going back generations, and obviously there's been a lot of talk about what union workers get now, as opposed to the foreign automakers that are setting up shop in Alabama and other states that don't have some of the same overhead that you have. How do you compete with them financially?
Well, it's a great question, and we have to separate the two issues. There's the cost of the current active workforce and the competitiveness of that, and then there's the cost of being a 105-year-old company with more retirees than we have active workers. We feel that responsibility to society, and we have, unlike the transplants, we have those burdens of cost on us, but clearly from pensions and health care obligations, they're big numbers. On the active worker side, there's still some more work to do, but we've made a lot of progress working with the UAW in the last few years in that regard, and we've reduced our roles from 83,000 to 44,000 in the last 3 years alone on the UAW side here in the U.S. On the pension side, of course, a lot of attention paid to the pensions and the healthcare side on the retirees. a lot of attention paid to the retiree trust that's being put together. We're moving forward with that. We put, you know, $4.5 billion into an account in January of this year, and we're moving forward with the UAW on that retiree health care trust. On the pensions, we were fully funded at the end of last year. So, of course, the market's been down this year, but we're watching that very closely. So it is a balancing act. We do have responsibilities to our retirees that the transplant companies don't have. At the same time, we're working with the UAW to address the current active employee base cost.
We are talking with Joe Henrichs, who's Group Vice President of Global Manufacturing and Labor Affairs at Ford. And Joe, what will be the main use of the $9 billion line of credit if you do get it in future legislation? And what will be the impact if you don't get at least that much or even none at all?
Yeah, at Ford, our plan is to not use taxpayer money, just so we're very clear. We asked for up to a $9 billion line of credit for several reasons. Number one, if there were to be what we call a significant industry event, i.e. one of our competitors were to have to file for a restructuring process, we want to make sure there's available pool of money while the credit markets are so tight to be able to keep our suppliers running and be able to maintain our operations because there's so much interdependency between GM, Ford, and Chrysler. And secondly, we noted that in case the economy dips even further or has a more prolonged recession than what we're planning for, we want to make sure that while we're going through this process that we set aside enough money to be able to help Ford if that were the case. But our base plan and the plan we submitted to Congress does not use taxpayer money for Ford.
What did you make of the members of the Senate and the House, especially in this later round of hearings? What points, what thoughts do you think were right on target, and which ones do you think missed the point?
Well, I think there are several members of both the House and the Senate who spent a lot of time thinking about this. Number one, we need to have a debt load for all the companies that is sustainable. And that's one of the issues that certainly is in play here. When the market falls and revenue falls at these levels, having interest expenses and debt at the levels that we have as a collective industry is not sustainable. So that's one of the big issues I think is right on target. The second issue around, is there too much capacity between the three companies, and is there a way to, over time, restructure the industry to have a more rational balance of what the capacity and demand is, I think is another great opportunity for discussion as we move forward. Thirdly, I'd say, and we've made a lot of progress on this in the last few years, but there's still work to be done to make sure that we have a competitive manufacturing labor cost structure compared to our transplants. But the other pieces of it were important as well, and that is, how do we make sure the rest of our business is competitive with the business, whether it be on the product side, introductions of new technology, and we're excited to tell that Ford story, but there's still more work to do.
Joe, unfortunately, our time is up. Very good of you, sir, to take time out of a very busy schedule to be with us.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Thanks, Greg, for the opportunity.
Joe Henrichs, Group Vice President of Global Manufacturing and Labor Affairs at Ford. This is Dateline Washington.